I find like I no trouble if you.
If you know how, well, you see, I couldn't think about operating this. Me telling you, much like I know so much, and I wouldn't know from first starting to that, you know.
It don't take any brain to do that, Mr.
You just got like a combination on your locks at the post office.
That's
got
right.
You got to get on your mind is what to touch
that's
at the right.
right
time. Which one to touch first, too.
And you know what I don't practice it, no.
You know. Well, I didn't know what maybe it's kind of on your line of work up there.
No, I never knew.
Well, I didn't know you had this. I'd be glad to see, that's better than dictating and you writing it down.
Much better.
It's much better and easier on you. It's hard for you to sit down here and write.
Yeah.
Unless it's you
a
professional stenographer. See, I can sit down and dictate. I could sit down here and dictate all these hunts and things to you, and you can write it down, but
mm-hmm.
you can get it over this year, so it'd be so much easier.
It's so much easier, and then you don't have to be so careful yourself.
No, what to say, you can take off what you don't want out.
Yeah.
Of course.
Now, there wasn't anything, excuse me.
Yeah, go ahead.
There wasn't anything I could do about those geese, was there? Except I could have kept them up.
Kept them up where they, you'd had to build your house, where that you couldn't have got to it.
Yeah, at night.
Yeah, and you could have, I could have come over here and trapped them for you. But in trapping, it's best to get a cage trap. You can get them alive then.
Yeah.
And trapping with a steel trap,
yeah.
Your best friend, your best neighbor dog would trot by that and
yeah.
step in a trap.
Yeah.
And not bothering the thing, but it could get in it.
Yeah.
Or something, some of your other fowl or your geese could get in that steel trap. And the way we always done, I'd go out, I'd tell them, I never did tell them I could do it though, but I could. Nearly all the dogs I had, and I just got two old 7-year-old dogs, not used to running now. Got those young dogs, they ain't trained enough to consider anything yet, you see. I never did think about going over three times around a fellow's place like Colt was catching his chickens for it.
Yeah.
Just like I was telling about Mr. Adams. Second time we went out there, we caught a 32-pound bobcat. One, now then, that one weighed 32 pounds, and we caught a bobcat like that. It eat Mr. Adams' pigs up.
Oh, he's a beauty, isn't he?
Now, you take that. That's a big cat.
That's a beautiful cat, isn't it?
Yeah, this one is like 2 pounds weighing as much as that one.
Yeah, this is a better picture.
Oh yeah, that's a good picture.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, now, fellas didn't want me to really run my dogs on lots of weight counters, huh? And they didn't want me to show. I showed that dog up there, and all they could find fault, the judge fault of that dog was, he is perfect, he is 24 inches tall, he had the right color, he held his tail up, see him holding that tail up, and he held his head right there. And they put him in sixth place because he's too fat. And you can see bones sticking up that high. Could you judge a dog grade him down and throw him down like that? No, it's crooked is what it was.
They didn't want you up there.
No, and then slipped off and wouldn't run. Well, none of them wouldn't let me know where they were going to run. And if your dogs won, the field had killed all the bench shows. And I wouldn't have showed mine on the bench. I'd never fool mine on the bench. And I wouldn't even thought about putting them up there, though I'd train stand on the bench. Well, theirs didn't stand up as good as mine, and I'd never been to see the bench before. And they knew this, that their dogs would trot along and smell of bushes and everything, nobody here but us, are they? They'd smell of bushes and have to clean out and all like that, and shoot, mine hit the ground, they'd gone, and they'd be a half a mile for it, and then you'd have to go along with their dogs. They'd put out one or two to strike, you know. Well, you could just come out up yonder and sit down, there's a fox or cat anywhere around in here, those dogs, mine went and got it, I didn't have to show them.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew good and well that they'd lose on that, they'd lose on everything. In fact, they didn't want me to even show mine. I got there, and I said I couldn't. I said it's too late. I wasn't. You never get too late there. And everything in the world. And I see him. One fella says, aren't you going to put Grady on as the best handled dog? See, when I put him up on the bench one time, we had to take him down, walk around with him, lead him around, and I just led him around and talked to him. He just didn't know what to tell him. We got back to the bench, he jumped up on the bench and stood up there for him. And they did, every dog they had a scooch down and everything. And they walked up in there. I'll tell you, I wanted to hit one fella, and I knew he was against me. He hit my dog this way with his fist, trying to make him not so good. Yeah. And he done it purposely. And I'm going to tell you, Mr. Master, I could hardly keep from. I started to tell him not hit that dog, not do that no more. And if he had, if I told him that, I wanted to hit him worse than I wanted to tell him. Because that's not right, hitting a man's dog like that, and him short of it. I was supposed to handle my dogs, and me not interfere with their dogs, and they weren't supposed to interfere with mine, but they did.
Where was it? South Gainesville?
Yeah, it was up at Gainesville, that field trial.
Yeah.
And the dog showing wasn't no field trial of it. They didn't have nothing to run, none of them did.
Well, they knew it, you see.
Not one of them had nothing. Had nothing but what I'd get would be cold on.
Well, you'd think if they get somebody in there that can handle a dog, they'd be glad to have him, Mr. Weaven. They
that's
watch
what
him
it's
and
for.
Learn something.
Well, you hear what's saying. I told them all. I says, let's all get good dogs. I've got some good ones and good registered dogs down there. Now, you all get some that we can cross and breed together. No, they didn't want to even breed to mine, but they'd sneak around out somewhere and get somebody else and slip around and buy some of my dog's puppies if they could.
Yeah.
And then they'd say there weren't no count.
Yeah.
Well, so yeah. One fella got one, he said it wouldn't run. He said it weren't no count, it wouldn't run.
Yeah.
Another fella standing there, he said, you just a damn liar. I said, that dog does run, I've heard it run.
I guess you get a little of that and everything.
Yeah, you get a little of everything, you see, in hunting and things like that, you see. Well, you take,
Who did Mr. Gehrig get that place from over there?
He bought that from Randall Graves. Randall Graves bought it from Adams.
Adams?
Not from Adams, but bought it from Richardson down here.
Yeah.
P.K.
Yeah.
Markenham.
Yeah.
And they sold it to Randall Graves, lived in Gainesville.
Uh-huh.
And then he sold it to Mr. Geiger.
But they call that the old Adams place.
Yeah.
Now, you knew him?
Yeah, he's the one that had the hogs. Got me to go out there and catch that bobcat. And this there, two weeks before that, he'd run this there off from hunting out there. He didn't know. Didn't really. He was a fine man.
Yeah. Now, what's that? How did that go?
Well, that's a story I told you yesterday about.
Yeah. Good. Tell me again.
So that he has... from Evanston's dog got after a coon.
Oh, yes, he was here in Evanston.
Yeah, he lived in Evanston. He walked down on the lake, thought he'd catch him a coon.
Yeah.
His dog struck a coon.
Yeah.
And it ran up to Micanopy Junction.
Yeah.
And it's crossing Mr. Adams' farm.
Yeah.
So
now, let's see, is Adams...
Yeah.
Oh, the junction is right straight that way, and junction. Adams is to the left, west of it.
Yeah, Adams is place, but it went all back on the lake down in there then.
Yeah.
300 acres in there belonged to the Adams place.
You know where that place is? You know this swamp right back of me?
Yeah.
Well, Adams place.
That's straight across there.
Yeah.
I know.
You know this country better than I do.
Oh, man, I've hunted in here. I used to go all in through here at night, back in the 30s and like that.
Yeah.
But I got just hunting in daytime, doing nothing but fox and cat hunting. All I do is turn the dog loose, start back down and in yonder, sit around and listen, direct or drive somewhere else, and I'd hear them strike someone.
Yeah.
When I'm fox hunting. But coon hunting, you got to stay with your dogs and follow them to catch them, you see. You go to catch them.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
You fox and cat hunt mostly
just to run them.
Yeah, unless we do this, if they get the cats or fox or anything gets to eating up and destroying your property or anything that they destroy for you,
uh-huh.
And you let us know, we go and catch them for you.
Uh-huh.
And we try to protect them as long as they're that nice, but when they get to where they get to catching something of yours, we kill them then.
Well, if you know which one is doing it, but they don't all do it.
Well, we just got to go ahead and catch them out until they quit it. That's why we do that.
Don't you know?
Should you quit missing it?
On this thing here, I saw one time, they're talking about the mountain lion.
Yeah.
That they got to killing out the mountain lions, and they just about exterminated the whole section, and then the deers and all came on and got so numerous, you know, that they starved.
Yeah.
So they had to start the mountain lions again. But they said what started them to start with was that some of the lions was getting poultry, sheep, or things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, you got to.
But he says the mountain lion don't do that.
It's something else.
But every now and then there is one, you see, that'll do it.
Yeah.
But if you could just have some way of finding out which one it was, or catch him doing it.
Yeah.
That'll be a little hard.
Well, you can get out and you can find the tracks where they hate too many of those, and you can go by the tracks a whole lot and track them up, and you can see the track where they've done this damage.
Uh-huh.
And you can figure out kind of which one it is by that.
Uh-huh.
Then the dog is left that you know, you watch his track, you know. I used to could read and tell you what, and I had 12, 13 dogs running, and I when I lost one, I was hunting for them, and I could tell. When I seen the way he went a road and made a track, I know which dog it was. I had my dog's tracks down to good at that.
Yeah.
And, of course, I don't know, since I've been sick, I can't figure that as good as I did back as I could at that time.
You think you have to kind of be in it?
Well, then my health is better then. You see, when you suffer and don't feel good and don't get no rest, you can't think good. And you take people just like a tree or anything or a car, everything wears out. And yeah. I'm just about wore out, you don't know the truth.
Well, I doubt it. But let me tell you, out here, I can't tell. I look at these calves and I say, well, they look like they're growing off. But you know, I can't tell by looking at them how they're growing. But you know, these fellas that go to the market.
Mm-hmm.
And watching the weights all the time. Why, some of them can tell you within 5 and 10 pounds what a calf weighs. I don't mean just one, but all of them.
Well, I guess.
And I have been, you know, so I could give you a pretty good idea, you know. I'd be close enough. But you know, right now, it'd just be a wild guess.
Well, listen, in long and 40s, I didn't, 3 years, I didn't do anything but buy and sell cattle.
Oh,
and
really?
Swap dairy, beef cattle for dairy cattle and dairy cattle for beef cattle, any way they wanted to trade. Just like you had one that you wanted to, had a milk cow over here and you wanted some beef type. You'd tell me, say, you get me so much beef and I'll get me what kind beef type that you wanted, you'd tell me, well, as soon as I found it back, I'd buy it. And I'd come by here and I'd drive up out here and I'd say, look at these and see if this is what you want. And if it didn't, if they weren't just exactly what you wanted and you didn't want them, I'd go ahead, you know, and then I'd swap with you. I'd swap with you if you wanted them. Tell you look at you and I'd figure what the margin, what I thought I could get for it, you know, and get pay for my hauling and trouble out of it.
Yeah.
I got Leroy and Mark Richardson, they put in orders for milk cows for me before they went in the stock business.
So
they knew me, I'd handle a lot of the produce and I was in the produce business, you see. And they told me what type of cow they wanted. They wanted full blooded Jerseys. Didn't have to be registered, but they wanted to be full blooded. And wanted them to give so much milk.
Now you was your headquarters was over Micanopy?
Yeah. And I had them, you know, Frank Keep down at Boardman. They had a big pasture down there, and I had that rented. I had 20 some odd cattle in there that I'd buy and sell and put in there and grade them in different places. And I had some back the other way. But when I got to where I couldn't rent no pasture, you know, I didn't have no land myself. And I couldn't rent no faster, you know. By the way, I had to quit and go back, and I went to carpentry, back to carpentry again. And I done a lot of contract carpentry.
Well, what did Frank do with his pasture?
He didn't have the money to art, and he was just renting it out.
Yeah.
They charged us 50 and 75 cents and $1 a month for it.
Uh-huh.
For that's what they charged, you know. 50 cents a month, mostly, you see, back then.
You mean for an acre or?
50 cents a month for cows to for the cow to graze on that.
Oh, I see.
Just like you'd come out better to rent this to me at $1 a month out here, and you would rent me $5 or $6 a year.
Yeah, that's
see,
right.
You see the point?
Yeah.
Well,
so he could make a little out of it too.
Yeah, he can. That way, most of them made a living. You see, at that time, and he got a few himself and got up, and then he got kept on until he used all the pasture himself. And
oh, he
and
did.
And I didn't have any place to keep my cow. You see.
Oh, Dan Burn.
I had to see when they could tell me anytime they wanted to, they would not let them put no more in there and move those out.
Yeah.
But the month, you see, if I'd have had it leased for so many years, I could have held it so many years, you know. If I'd have wanted to have made some trade back with him, if it wouldn't have made any difference to me, I'd let him have it back. I always figured this, but he didn't lease it. He just rented it. You put him in out for so much I had. He went up 75 cents then, I think, seemed like grown cow, maybe $1.
Mm-hmm.
But he usually just a head, and if it's a calf, he charged just the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
He had a cow and calf, and that was two.
Yeah.
They're the one.
Yeah.
Well, that was all right. That was that. If we, if...
Yeah. Well, he'd keep up the, he'd fertilize it and keep up the fences.
And
give you a little loading space.
Yeah, he had a loading chute there. And we could load them or unload them.
Now, Mr. Adams got put out when the dogs went over his property. What did he do? Think they bothered his cattle or something?
I don't know. I might have been afraid his hogs or something, you know. I never did ask Mr. Adams because when I heard about it, see, this Derry and I and John McCray done it. He did live up here where Robert Williams lives now.
Oh, yes.
But John...
And he brought up there.
Yeah, he reared up there. And so John and this there and I were and worked hard at Fairfield and Ned Rush. We all fox and hunted together.
Oh.
We hunted a lot together, you know. We all didn't have so many dogs at that time. And so that if I wanted to go hunting, they'd tell me, if they couldn't go, they'd tell me to carry their dogs on, you see. I'd carry them on. If they could, they'd come, and if they couldn't, and if they didn't know where coming, they'd tell me what time they'd, if I was running, and they'd say, well, I can't go before 4 o'clock in the morning. Says, if you're running at 4 o'clock in the morning, says, if you come get me, says, I'll go back with you. Well, I'd be down the side of the center running down there, and about 3:30, I'd get my car and I'd run back up here and pick them up and carry them back down. Now, they didn't know where it was going.
Mm-hmm.
And that sweet stayed until maybe 7 or 8 o'clock in the tree the next morning. They got to hear part of the race. They couldn't leave home that night. Nobody stayed the wives. Well, I figured, I said, well, if...
But they could get up early.
Well, they'd have went then, but they didn't want to leave the wife by themselves.
Yeah.
The wife didn't just a little afraid to stay, you know.
But then early in the morning, they didn't care.
Yeah, after we got that time, then you see, they wasn't scared, you see, to stay there by themselves. And sometimes they could get somebody to come stay, some little girl or some girl or something that way, to come stay with them, you see.
Mm-hmm.
With the wives, and they wouldn't be by themselves, sometimes they couldn't. So that I wasn't married. Well, I was married that time. I lived right there in town and didn't make any difference. As many houses right close, my wife stayed by herself, you see. Didn't make any difference.
Right there close in town.
Yeah,
yeah,
right there in town, you
yeah.
see. And happened to be, she wasn't scary, you know, and she locked her shoes. She was going to lock those doors at night anyhow. Didn't matter who it was. I never do lock a door, hardly.
Yeah.
Reason I was fixing, latching that door was on account of my nephew's little children coming over there. And
I noticed you had it up high.
They take sticks. If I don't put a nail above, they take sticks up and go in there.
Ah.
Well, you see, they got my dog medicine out there. I give them a dog medicine one day, trying to give it to them, and that's a dangerous thing. And they didn't know And the better, they had hit me the day before, and they was trying to give their dog some of my dog medicine, you see. I don't think they'll give it to them, because mine didn't need any more. You know, I give it to them the day before, and I happened to come up, you know. Didn't know anybody, see, and now I didn't know nobody until Frank won either for some time after that, and then I eased that to them and told them I'd tell them something so they wouldn't bother the babies.
Sure,
they didn't know any better.
Yeah.
And I told them. They, 1 week I bought 4.5 dozen eggs, and the day before I'd put them on that wood stove, and they didn't never seen that wood stove, and they didn't see how in the world they cooked on it. And the day before, and they went over to see me, you know, to play and see that wood, going to cook, see it cooked on that wood stove. And they turned in and they seen me get eggs and put in there, and they knew where my eggs was. And they got some pots and set on that stove, and they'd sit in there a while, and they'd broke eggs on the floor and out there. And first day, I didn't know what went with them. And the next time, I seen the sign of it, and the next time I happened to come up and they didn't do it. And I could lock the door, and I got the key fastened in the door, and I couldn't get it out, and never ever took it off and fixed it. And I just tacked that up to be that quick, you know, and I'd walk, see.
Yeah.
See, if they get into medicine there, I got guns in there, and when them loaded, well, the gun's no good if it ain't loaded.
Yeah.
And so that I keep a gun to shoot rats with, a .22 rifle shot shell in it, but that killed one of them, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Lord, yeah.
And that's what I use it for, just kill something like a cat coming up, you know. Well, I don't expect someone to come in on me at night and I go to bed. I don't think about locking the door.
No, if you thought about that, you know.
2 years at the junction, and never did lock the doors when I'm out there. I figured this. I said, well, if someone comes up, if they're hungry, I'd rather go in and get them something to eat and go on. It's to not eat. And I says, if they're going to get in there anyway, and I lock the door, they'll break and just. I'll have to fix the windows, and it'd be better for me to just lose a little something. I never had too much that one time, no way. I said, it's better for me to take chances. And these dogs here, I said, and them doors not locked, they'll think somebody's around close, and you know, nobody never bothered the thing out there.
Yeah.
And you take, you got to figure things like that, too. Like here, if somebody comes up here and these doors not locked, they figure you around here close.
Yeah.
Or somebody could be around here close. And if the door is locked, they figure that somebody could watch out trying to see anybody come. They could break in.
Yeah.
They're going to break in. It is like Richard says, the Richard boy said, they didn't lock it when nobody lived out there. Said, if anybody's going to break in, they'd break in anyway and just be damaged, huh?
Yeah.
Said they just left the door open all the time.
Is that right?
Of course, they didn't have nothing out there, you know.
Yeah.
But they said, if anybody wanted to go in there, they'd break in. And they'd have to fix the windows.
Well, now, when this is there, one of his dogs called Mr. Adams' place there, and he objected to it. He told him, he right strong about it.
Yeah, he told him he didn't allow no hunting on there, and not come back on it again.
Yeah.
Then, in 2 weeks after that, his brood sow brought 8 pigs, and the bobcats killed all of them, all 8 of them. Then, and 2 weeks after that, his other brood sow brought 10, and the cats killed those. So he came in town and asked Mr. Mountain, that's Buster's daddy, if he knew anybody that had any cat dogs. Said that he had 2 sows that brought pigs and killed, caught all of them in 2 weeks' time. And he wanted to get him to go out there and catch those cats for us. Well, Mr. Mountain told him to come around and see me. Says, Matt Weaver's got.
Was Mr. Mountain at the garage?
Yeah, he owned the garage, and that's Buster's daddy.
Yeah.
And he told him to, says, Mac Weaver has some around there, go around and see him. He'd be glad to go out there and catch him for you. So, Dizzy there had already told me about Mr. Adams run him off the place, uh-huh. my hunting buddy, you see, uh-huh. so that I told him, I said, I'll be out there in the morning and see. Bring my dogs. I have two that I run, used to run cats with. And I said, I believe they'll pick one to track up if they come across it. And so I drove out the next morning. I turned those two dogs loose, and now they did. Mm-hmm. They went to run it and jumped it, and I turned all my other dogs loose. And all of them, one walker dog run it. One walker dog I had wouldn't run the cat. He wouldn't run nothing but a fox for a long time. So that he didn't run that morning. And the next morning, the cat run up and got on the railroad track and... It walked this railroad track for about a quarter of a mile. And the dogs couldn't trail it on this railroad track, and they kept circling.
Now there's that up past the junction. Up.
Yeah. And there's down on this side of the junction.
This side of the junction.
Toward Stevenson,
yeah.
where that it got on the track, but it went off the track right up there just below Woody Coleman's house in that little bayhead term. It went off the track there. Mm-hmm. And they circled way back. I just could hear them halfway down the lake at Stevenson, back around up in this way. You'd hear one bark where they'd run, but they couldn't find where he went to. And after a while, a little speckled yip I had circled plumb up there, went up the railroad at so far until they found where that cat went off that track and picked it up again. Mm-hmm. Well, there wasn't but two more dogs getting to her when I got up there. I got my car and drove up as quick as I could. And I caught those because it was getting so late and decided I'd wait and come back the next morning. It is such a large cat and my dogs was all small and I was kind of afraid it would maybe hurt some of them. So that, and they had never fought very many cats.
I imagine those cats do hurt at all.
They do. So that I went down and got Diz there and asked him if he'd come up and help me catch a cat the next morning. And he said, no, he couldn't. He said that Mr. Adams had just run him off the place and he couldn't go up there and hunt up there. And I said, well, you come on, meet me up there. You walk up the railroad, and I'll come through this way and turn loose and strike. And you just keep your dogs tied so they won't strike a coon or something. And when mine jumps it, I said, you can turn yours loose then. They're used to doing that, you know, running fox with me that way, you see.
Uh-huh.
And I says, I want your dogs. You got two large dogs here. And I said, they can help mine fight him when they catch it. I said, they'll catch it. So that he met me up there, and we struck the cat, and they run it about 2 hours. And I heard this little speckled yip catch a cat right before she picked it up, where it slipped off the track that morning, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but of course they'd run all around. They done got didn't take them just one trip around. I had to get wise to that cat, you know, about him without that railroad tracks and all like that.
Mm-hmm.
One time they always had to do. They was good trained dogs. Till they knew then why I'd circle for him.
Uh-huh.
And so that he tried all he could that morning, and I heard her catch him. I seen the cat just did get across the railroad track, and she was right in behind it. And then the other dog was behind her.
You could see him?
Yeah, I seen him, but I didn't see her when she caught it. And when I got there, the other dogs done got there, and boy, they made a racket too. And they'd caught the cat in water, and they couldn't mash it to the ground good on account of the water, and he'd cut two or three dogs, they're bleeding pretty bad, these two Dizdare's dogs.
What'd they do, smack them?
Cut, man, they can just take that away, just cut it off.
Just like a cat?
Just like a house cat.
Yeah.
Scratch it like a house cat, you know how they can scratch you.
Yeah.
Well, that's the way they're those big bobcats, and they're so much stronger than a house
yeah.
cat. So that he had bit those two dogs they had, one of their dogs caught with the throat. Well, my dogs, I had a big red speckled dog, he caught in the chest and he mashed his thing to the ground and he killed it that quick when he got that chest hold on it. But it in water and at that they couldn't mash to the ground, you see, they'd get water in the nose. But they had it killed. He's dying at just a gap once or twice after I got there. And I didn't have to run about 100 yards to get to him. And I could run fast then. So we caught that cat and I carried him to town. He weighed 32 pounds. After he'd done all that running. And he was a poor cat. And he had had a scar where another cat had cut him from open near the head. Big scar there on him. We didn't fight with another big cat.
Now how do you figure that?
They get to fighting, one gets, they get on the back and they do that bad cutting with the hind feet.
Oh.
They catch and hold with these front ones and just reach up to catch the dog and bite in the hole with these front. They'll reach up and they'll hit him and split his guts open sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Split them plumb wide open. I had marks plumb across mine where they'd hit him. But
they'll do a dog the same way.
Well, they done my dogs that way.
Yeah.
I've had them cut plumb on the sides here, 8 and 10 inches long. Didn't go very deep.
You have to sew them up?
No, didn't go deep enough. I was lucky. Some people had to sew their dogs up, but I never did have one cut that way.
Mm-hmm.
I caught lots of cats around here. They used to be bad, and people had hogs and chickens and pigs. They get started, they slip up in daytime, and your chickens get feeding out, John, they'll slip up at 11 o'clock and catch you.
Oh.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, now a fox will do it, too.
Yeah, a fox will, but a gray fox don't hunt for fowls much. You know what they're up there mostly for? It's rats.
Rats. Yeah.
Now, don't forget that, because in Alabama, they killed 100 fox at Auburn, Alabama, experiment station.
Yeah.
And gray fox.
Yeah.
And they cut them open, they had found one out of 100 had eat a bird.
Great.
But they found bugs, fruit, rats, more rats than anything else that they'd eat.
Yeah, that,
But now
the red fox won't eat, it won't be different.
No, a red fox will catch fowls worse than a gray will.
Yeah. But they'll eat the other things too, rats.
Yeah, they're a great rider too. They're worth a lot. If they catch a few chickens, they're worth that to you to be around you.
Yeah.
And
is that right?
So I told all I told.
Well, now you know I never thought of that.
Well, you see, a lot of people to catch a chicken, they get mad. They don't rear. They don't know. They don't realize.
Yes.
I can't tell them. They know more about it than I do.
Yeah. Let me tell you something. Now,
don't know the difference. You can't tell them. Listen. Did you know this big horn owl is a great rare? They feed their young ones more on rats than anything else.
Yeah.
And they don't bother fowls much.
Yeah.
I've seen them flying over fields right down, you know, and you see them at hours at a time flying right low on the ground. They'll dip down that way, you know.
Uh-huh.
And go on. Sometimes they catch them, sometimes they see them fly out and eat something.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it at first, but it's rats. And down here, Donahue came from Miami up here, and we hunted with me a whole lot back up here. When he first came up here about 10 years ago, down there in the old hospital where they had, Dr. Strange had, he had that place rented, and there's one of those big owls had its nest up there in that tower up on top, you know.
You like orange juice?
Yeah, thank you. I'll take some. So that he just let them go, and you know what? So it was a sight at the rat hides up there. They skin them for me.
That's supposed to be fresh. See if it's all right. Sours might fast these days.
It's all right.
That's the last of the season. I got this down here at Mr. Huff's.
You did?
Uh-huh. And juice them. I get them a bushel at a time and juice them. I don't juice the whole bushel, you know, right one, the right thing.
Well, I just started to say, this year is not the orange juice that they put up. I knew this is homemade orange juice, not
Texas. Yeah. Oh, it's good. But you get some of them little sweet oranges and, I'm telling you, that's a different,
I like that sour taste, too. I like anything sour.
Yeah.
Sometimes it makes me wink my eyes and makes me You take all that mine. I've been trying to get mine pulled. I got to have her to look at it.
Yeah, that's not the teeth, that's the gums.
Mm-hmm.
I have no trouble with my gums, too.
Yeah, I'll tell my horse, your mine ought to been pulled long ago. When I had the money and could have had it done and wanted it done so bad, I couldn't get them to. They said there wasn't nothing wrong with them. They couldn't see no cavities nowhere in it. I said, that ain't the trouble, it's just the root.
Yeah.
And that's what's giving me trouble. I got one right here loose now. Trying to get an appointment. I can get an appointment in 29th of July before I can get an appointment now. I've had it nearly a month now.
I tell you what let's do. Let's go back there and get some of them melons. When they hear the mill whistle, they'll light in.
Yeah, they'll howl.
Yeah.
Lots of dogs does that. They're all over town, some dogs howl that way. A bunch of them. But I make mine hush if they start, you know, because I'm pretty disturbed with some of them. They won't sleep.
Now, this far out isn't what they won't do, it's bad.
They're out here.
Uh-huh.
Well, they'd howl out here, but wouldn't be bothering nobody.
No. I
wouldn't pay no attention to it myself.
You know that mill whistle is just as clear right here?
Yeah, and the air comes from that way. You can hear it just plain as you can right there. So a lot of times you can hear it plain as the wind's coming this way from the north.
Yeah.
North, a little bit northwest, you can hear it plain as here and you can right up where I live.
You know, a whistle like that, I get used to it and then I guess so I never hear it.
Well, I don't pay no attention to nobody else's dog barking at but mine.
Yeah.
Because if a dog barks anywhere around and they don't like it, they come just on me because I got hounds.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised to know that. I've had them tell me when I hadn't had a dog that sold out and quit for about 6 months at the time. I've had them tell me, say, your old dog kept me awake all night last night. Says, I've been doing it for 7 nights.
Yeah.
I said, I don't even own a dog in 6 months. Well, they just blame my dogs. Well, because there's hounds, you know.
Sure.
A lot of people think the hounds own the dogs that do it and the damage, you know, but they're not.
Let me see. Now, Mr. Adams and your friend,
Biz Dare,
after that night, then they sort of made up.
Never did. Mr. Dizzy went up around 100 any time with me and anywhere, and he never said a word. And I told him about it. I told Mr. Adams, I said, I have a friend, Hunter. I didn't tell Mr. Man that he'd told us to tell for the place. And I says, he will not bother anything. And I says, if he's seeing things going wrong, he'd do just like I do, go and tell you. You take a... If I was walking down nine near some of your cattle out over yonder, if I was right where I could get them back in, I'd put them in, and I'd fix that place for you right there before I left there. And if I can't, I'd drive around up here and leave my dog where it's at and come around here and tell you this out.
Yeah.
You can hear that. That's the way Bill Richard and I does. And see, if I'm hunting a dog, he drive over and tell me somebody killed one of them over there between, he seen it as he went in one morning, I was blowing my horn over at the horn place. And he heard me blowing the horn, he drove over. I says, I'm afraid I've got bad news for you.
Yeah.
Says, one of your dogs dead over there on between the ranch there and the county line road up there, on the road there.
Huh.
I says, to ask him, he said, I think I know it's yours. If he'd looked on the collar, he could see the name, but he didn't.
Uh-huh.
See, I keep collars on my name on my collars on my dog, so people know that's my dog, you see.
Now tell me again about these coons getting in the melons out there. When they come out there, when the melons are still green,
well, before they get really ripe, but they can't tell every time where a melon's ripe or not.
Mm-hmm.
And especially a young coon will all in on the wrong melon seed.
Yeah.
Naturally, you see.
Now, you know, that sort of explains this.
Mm-hmm.
There would be a great big spot out there.
Yeah.
From here to the That little garage, I called it. Well, there's just a whole lot of melons been cut.
Well, you see, there comes the old one with that bunch of pretty good-sized little coons up about this high, you know, coming out there, and she opens them up and gets them started how to get into it.
And they go out
and
there.
She opens them up, and they go and eat out of that, and she'll go and cut them another.
Yeah.
Just like we feed the babies.
Yeah.
You see, if you just stop and think,
you
know what's going on. And you can go out there with a dog, and a coon, I know, and remove her young ones are well from that, and they can run one night out there one morning, and she hears it bark and run and happens to tree them.
Yeah.
You don't have to kill them. They won't come back no more. They'll leave that.
Yeah. Well, now this is jumping around. I keep thinking of so many things.
Well,
we
jumped too much for you to really get and make it hard for you to figure that out.
No, that'd make it all right. Now, don't you know when I lost my goose?
Yeah.
My old gander. And I didn't see, I looked for several months, and you know, you can still see the feathers. And I never did see a sign.
Well, that's a bobcat, because he don't make no track hardly when he's doing something like that.
Never saw any track.
A bobcat can do it, or a panther.
Yeah.
But if it had been a panther, he'd have killed him the first time he got a hold of him. I don't guess he'd hardly got loose from it.
Yeah.
You see, a bobcat, Sometimes they get scared, and the goose makes much farther and flops with his wings, and they fight with their wings.
Yeah.
And he don't get a hold of them good. When he turns loose one place, he moves, trying to get away from them, and the goose is pretty strong, you see.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot stronger than a chicken.
Yeah.
Anything that just gives up and sells, you know, they don't have no trouble catching. Mm-hmm. Now I'm thinking getting one of them by the back, if what they have to do is to get him by the back of the neck to carry him. And some of them throw them across their shoulders this way, sling them around.
Uh huh. I heard that's what they've done.
And of course, if it's not too large, they get it in its mouth and throw the dog. Just pick up the whole chicken, they can throw the chicken and walk with it.
Yeah. But a goose, they'd have to hold the head mighty high.
Yeah. They could hardly hold it up, you know.
Yeah.
It'd drag and be in the way about walking and running.
And they'll take that way off.
I've got pictures in the hunter's horn where they're feeding the fox.
Yeah.
Hunters feed the fox, you know.
Uh-huh.
They have plate on their own ranches, you see, and things like that. And they killed out, you know, the government, deer hunters got that all through there, slipped it all through in places. And they stopped them and killed all the fox and put trappers out there, and the government spent several $1 million trapping them, you know, and placing, putting deer in there.
Uh-huh.
Or people just wanted a deer hunt, you know.
Uh-huh.
Well, you want to stop and think. You want to, that you don't care nothing about, you leave that alone. The other man does. And he's supposed to let you have you and not bother you. And it's just like, now, I bought over 100 fox and gave to the farmers around here. Mr. Rush bought over 100 and turned loose back around over in his place. He is a big farmer. And Emily Keep down here, Boardman and Frank and them, Emily sent a lot of them from Michigan down here.
Oh.
We never could keep in red fox. And we put them around, give them to anybody that wanted a fox around the place to eat the rats.
Mm-hmm.
We give them to them. And they wanted to pay me for the fox. I said, no, I wouldn't. I said, I'll buy them and give you all you want now. You tell me I'll get you pairs of them and give you all you want. If you'll let me out just privilege of hunting when they get started on your place. And I said, my dog's killed one, they get scarce, I'll buy you some more and give you. And they said, well, let me pay half. I said, no. I said, I'm glad to buy them and help you. Yes, sir. You have the land. You paid for the land. You paid taxes on it. And I said, that's enough for you. Well, a lot of them tried to pay me, but I wouldn't take it. Well, they had one of them off of it. Give them money back or pay me then for getting them. I said, no, I'm charging the thing for it.
If you put out poison back there,
you poison anything comes along and eats it.
Yeah. And it's likely to stay there a good time.
You can't tell how long, and you can't remember, and go back and find out if it ever saved your life.
Yeah.
That's the reason most of hunters will not go around a watermelon field with their dogs that because some people puts it out, unless they ask the people. Hey, I wouldn't think about coming over in here with my dogs now, because if they got poison, that'd be my hard luck. But you're supposed to let each other know about these things.
Now, Freddie, he's up there at the old Andrew Jackson place.
Yeah.
And he didn't have any trouble with coons.
Well,
so he didn't pause at all.
Over Andrew Jackson place across the River Styx over there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I seen the melon back up in there here a while back, seen the place over in there. Will you take...
and then down there on the lake.
Mm-hmm.
They had some trouble down there, and they poisoned a little bit down there, but they didn't have much trouble. Most of the trouble they had this...
was right out here.
Yes. And it was early.
Yeah, they do that. Well, as soon as you... if you kill one or two, or either something happens to you, you can take a steel trap out there and catch them and turn one loose. It'll do more good than poison.
Yeah.
Catch it and then just turn it loose. That will leave and take every coon. It's instinct in them. They know to move. They're
yeah.
going to move.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you take... see, the coon hide used to be very valuable. You know how much I used to pay for a coon hide? $5 and $6 a piece, and just count.
That much?
Yes, sir. When I
you paid that?
Yeah. Then I had to sell them. Of course, sometimes I didn't get my money back. But most of the time, I got more than my money back. Sometimes.
Well, how much would they have to pay you for then?
Well, I'd usually make about 50 cents on a coon hide. Sometimes it'd go up and make a dollar, and sometimes it'd come down and I'd get my money back. Sometimes it'd drop off a dollar and I'd lose my time and maybe 50 cents or a dollar on a coon hide.
Yeah.
See, it varies, you know. When you're speculating, you got to be a good loser, same as good winner. You're going to lose some during the time you're speculating.
Well, now look, over there at... that old Simonton ranch over there, that's so big now.
Yeah.
You got a fellow would have a big range there for
you. Yeah, the big range there, but you know, you strike something, come from way across that Interstate 75, and bang, your dogs will go over there. That just ruined me about. Then back over on this side, now back over across River Styx, they took that up in for deer and game reserve.
Well, and you can't run in there?
Nah, they won't let me hunt over there. And that's two of my main hunting places. You see, when I lived at the junction, my dogs come around in here. They didn't find. They'd go across the highway and go on over around the horn place. But you see, they'd be coming back and they'd watch for cars. Now, when they strike a fox or cat and it runs across there, they don't watch for cars much. See, they run right in front of them.
Yeah.
And they're hunting, and a lot of people don't care if they do. They like to kill dogs.
Yeah, they go out of their way to hit them.
Yeah, they do that. I know Mr. Mr. Carlin passed away over between Gaines and Hawthorne one morning. He had a dog that he just thought there wasn't nothing like that dog. And that was a long time back, several years, about 15, 20 years ago, I guess it was. But I knew Mr. Carlin when he lived at Hawthorne. I heard he was a hunter over there, and I went over to see him. So that this fella said that... he killed his best dog that morning, crossing the road running the cat. And he got in his car and followed him. He was a bread truck man or some man was in driving a truck with somebody anyway out of Palatka or Greenville one. And he called him and he asked him, says, just how come you killed that dog? He says, that was 3 I've got in the last 2 weeks. 3 that I've got in the last 2 weeks. I asked Mr. Carlin, I said, what did you do, Mr. Carlin? What did you say or do? He says, I just had to look down at the ground and walk over.
Yeah.
He says, I had to get away from it.
What? Where is the horn place? I'm not acquainted with that.
the Horn place, you know, the Richmond owned it over. I say they bought it.
Oh.
You go right down the county line until you cross the road coming from the grade, coming from Micanopy to the range, and you go on down that little hollow and you start back up. It's right on the left hand side there. That's the old Horn place.
Oh, that's the old Horn.
And it goes up in that close to the wooden land.
I've been back in there.
Well, right across that gate, that's where I used to turn my dogs loose, and I could go back there maybe 2 or 3 days, pick dogs up. They got to have something left the country with it.
Yeah.
And it took a long time to come hunt the way back. Yeah. They'd come back and lie down and wait for me.
Yeah.
Those two old dogs I got now, all mine would do that. I trained myself, you see. They'd come back and lie down there.
But now this Interstate 75 is...
Oh, it's come right across there. It hits right the edge of the Horn place there.
Yeah.
And that on across on our, just on the other side of the Richmond Patch, well, it would go through a lot of their property.
What was Mr. Adams like?
What's that?
What was Mr. Adams like?
Over here?
Mm-hmm.
You mean what he did and everything?
Yeah, what sort of fellow was he?
He was a pretty nice fellow. I don't think that I ever saw no, Mr. Adams to do. I thought it was a little bit old.
That
said to Mr. Dedd.
Yeah.
He's always a nice man.
Oh, that's what I thought. Everybody spoke well of him. I've heard people speak of him.
Well, now that's the only thing I've known Mr. Adams to do. But reason I told you about that, I want you to understand how we all are good hunters. And if they don't hunt and do people that look right, I want to. A good hunter, if he won't treat people right, I won't hunt with him.
Well, the trouble with Mr. Adams was he got hard up in the wrong time, in the 30s.
Well, it was in a bad time.
When the money was so short.
And you couldn't make anything, hardly anything.
If you owed something, you were in bad shape, wasn't
you? Yeah, and if you got a little behind, you just couldn't pay out. He just couldn't pay out that place, you know.
Yeah.
And he was a good dairyman, and he went back to Miami.
Mm-hmm.
He went back down there and went back to work. See, he worked as a dairyman. He just happened to come up down by at the wrong place that you couldn't make anything harder.
Yeah.
He had cabbage. I was in the produce business, and I sold his cabbage for him.
Mm-hmm.
No, you take that only thing that I ever, anything. Of course, in a way, that was all right for him to do that, in a way. But if he had just... not have told him to.
Yeah.
It's quite so rough, of course. If you think there's something going wrong, you know, and somebody come along there, you may think they done it.
Well, now, did he live?
He lived in that big house where Mr. Carter lived.
Did he live there a pretty good long while?
Yeah, he lived there, I don't know how many years.
20 years?
A fellow by the name of White lived there when I came to Florida, then Mr. Adams bought it from White. White bought out, I think a fellow from White from Carolina, bought a Georgia one. He was from Georgia, and he got Mr. Clark from Georgia, stayed out there and farmed a year or two out there. And I forgot who owned it then. I believe Mr. White owned it at that time before he sold to Adams. Well, they was fine people. I used to go to, he had dogs. And I used to go to Leesburg when he moved down there. I went down there and went to fox hunting with him down there.
Yeah.
In 1919, I shipped a couple of dogs from Carbon Hill, Alabama, to Arkansas and hunted out there 30 days.
Oh, really?
And you.
When? 1919.
1919. That's the war
zone. You shipped a
couple of dogs to Arkansas and went out there and hunted 30 days.
Out around Fort Smith?
No, I was out there south of Hot Springs.
Yeah.
I shipped them to Hot Springs and got all went south down in there on the river.
In 1929, I spent a couple of months in the summer out there, way out there in the hills, this side of Fort Smith.
You did?
Yeah.
Well,
Buffalo River.
I used to know a whole lot. Now, this is on the Oshito River where I hunted at, back in that way, back south.
Oh, yeah, I've been along there.
Seven or eight miles, right down south, going right straight out of south, to cross the river down there, then we'd go up there on the forks of the Oshito River.
Yeah.
the fork's way up back west of the bridge. And it went on down and come on around, and that's where I went in and hunted some fellas. Mm-hmm.
Did you, was Jimmy Means in business when you was in the produce business?
Jim Means?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He raised a lot of sweet potatoes.
Yeah, I never did handle any of the sweet potatoes much because you take,
You gotta be fixed for that.
Well, you take Georgia and Tennessee
yeah.
now,
yeah.
and I handle them from up there
yeah.
and down here. But now very few people grew sweet potatoes in Florida.
Yeah. Well, how'd he get into it?
Well, he just got into it. I had sweet potatoes last year, a few rows in my garden.
Yeah.
Just around it. And I was all right, the moles eat them up.
Yeah. Well, you know, I brought up on sweet potatoes.
You were?
Up there in Tennessee.
Oh, that's right.
I come from that old sweet potato country up around Gleason.
You did?
Yes. I live just...
You was in the eastern part of the state, weren't
West.
You? Yeah, the western part of the state. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where the sweet potatoes are.
Yeah, back west in there. They bring them to Nashville and sell them there, and those truck drivers bring them down here. And
yeah.
I'd sell a lot of them for.
Yeah. Leasing?
You see, I was in the wholesale business. I didn't do any retailing, you know.
Yeah.
And Jim could sell all he could make to them stores here.
Oh, he could?
Yeah. All he made, he just sold them to people and could go down and buy them in the stores.
Yeah. You know, Jim, I first time I saw Jim, I took a liking to him.
Oh, Jim, pretty good old boy. We used to play baseball.
Yeah.
One time, I'll tell you a little about this, you know. I didn't go out for a pitcher. I jacked a pink in my hand, arm, iron. I've been a pretty good pitcher, you see, when I came to Florida. So, on account of my arm, I played second base most of the time because I didn't have as far to throw.
Yeah.
I could play outfield or any of it. I played any of it. I have caught, but I didn't try to make a catcher. I caught a few games when we didn't have a catcher, you see. So that
you really have been around.
Well, I just liked two things I liked was fox hunting and cat hunting and baseball was my best sports, and so I left everything else off.
Yeah.
I left drinking and this rough stuff off as much as I could.
Yeah.
I figured if I was out in the woods with dogs, you know, I wouldn't be getting in any trouble.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to tell about dinner?
So that one day we went down, we used to meet, we had a ball club up there, and Jimmy was a pitcher, and Glenn Giger and Furth.
He's a pitcher.
Yeah, he liked to pitch, but he wasn't a good pitcher. He was easy hit. He'd break his ball. You could see it. He didn't have no slick stuff, you know, to pull. And you could see his breaking. I batted him a time or two, and I could hit him every time I went to the bat.
Yeah.
Because he threw with his arm and broke with his arm. That ball that you break with your wrist, you played ball, haven't you?
Yeah.
The ball you break with your wrist is hardest, and to hit it, don't break it. Gets right at you. Don't break much, but there's that way.
Yeah.
And, so that he batted cross-handed. We used to, the team used to meet us down there one day at Orange Lake, and they didn't come. He asked me, he says, Mac, he says, left. He says, well, you, how about you getting up a team and grabbing up a team and playing us, and you pitch again first. I laughed. I said, Jim, I tell you what I'll do. I said, I'll pick up enough of these boys and old men around here, and I'll play you all 9 innings, and I'll pitch 9 innings against every one of you with just these colors. Oh, man, they all went crazy. They lined up, you know, and they wanted to sign for Chamberlain to be the umpire. I said, no, sir. No, that was another time. That was another game we played. Picked up scraps and Sanford. He was getting me and Glenn Giger, you see, getting me, you know, in playing ball the whole time. So that we went to play on that day, you know, and we took the field. So I got out there and warmed up a little bit. I said, now you know I don't go out for a pitcher, Jim. He is a leadoff man. He got up there and he was going to hit that bow, you know. I laughed at him pulling the thing out. I said, Jim, I'm going to throw you 3 bowls and strike you out, and laughed at him. I'm close-handed. I just cut a straight bowl out on the inside corner just above his knee right there. And he missed it. You know, 90% of people don't know you can do that and pull out a lot of times, you know. I just cut it up and just like it. Right across the plate on the inside. Of course, he was looking for me to make a change up, you know. I didn't do it. He stuck it out and missed it. I cut another one at the same place, you know, and he missed all 3 of them. I laughed at it. I said, I told you I'd do it in the gym. But here come my Cray, our catcher, and he was a good single hitter, and he watched that bowl.
Which one is that?
Frank McCray was catching.
Frank.
Yeah.
I know Frank.
You know Frank, don't you? And he was a good hitter, and I knew it. And I had never pitched to him, and he was going to.
Oh, they were sort of an Evanston bunch.
Yeah, well, but we're trained. They played to Micanopy all the time. That's where they're trained at. Then they played around a little other places.
Oh, I see.
But we all played together, you know.
I see.
Rob Woods has played with them, too, you know, when like that. So that Bob was down there that day. So that I told Jim, I said, Jim, and Fred played with us too. We all played together on big, we went to play, you know, real playing teams, you know. I didn't know what to get Frank when he went to bat, but I meant to strike all 3 of the first and space me out. So I knew Frank liked the ball right up here, and he could hit it, he'd hit it, his right hand about it, he'd bat it over, and he batted both ways. But if it's a right-hand pitcher, he'd bat left-handed. If it's a left-hand pitcher, he'd try to get on the other side. He tried to bat both ways. That isn't a good system. I could hit a left-handed as good as I could, a right and a right as good as I could. The main thing is to keep your eye and mind on that ball when you hit it.
Yeah.
That was the main thing.
Yeah.
So that I come over there and I could catch a thread with this finger and throw it straight right around the fella's neck. Just blow his shoulders right there. And it wouldn't break it got right at it. It'd break about 6 inches. Overhanded. And I threw Frank that, and he struck at it and started to run. And he said, sure, he hit it. And it just broke by the bat. And when he did, I came back with an out and let it be a ball. Came back with that same ball again, he struck at it again and missed it. And he looked at me as funny, thought he missed those batters. That's where he wanted them, but he didn't know that little short break. So that I threw him out then, and he would come back, and I threw that same thing again, right up where he wanted it. And he struck at it again and missed it. And I was 5, I threw him. Threw Jim 3 and him 5. Well, Glenn Giger, our shortstop, he came up and he was a cleanup man and he was a good hitter. Well, he couldn't hit that ball and I knew it. And he liked to low out at the outside of the place. Well, I threw him that first ball and it'd be a strike. The next one threw him on over here, switched back again and back to the out like he wanted on and made it be a ball.